welcome to episode 281 of the podcast. I immediately threw myself for a loop because I suddenly, and not with any preparation, said all instead of guys. I guess I'm doing some sort of phase out of that word. I don't know. I was not thinking about that at all when I pressed record. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 281 with my guest, Lori Kilmartin. I am just quickly going to shout out all the wonderful people that I had the pleasure of meeting and spending some time with at Awesome Con last weekend in Washington, D.C. That was just a really, really special trip. And God, it just reinforces the joy that I feel whenever I get to meet podcast listeners in person. It was really, really food for the soul. I also want to thank Steve for your YA recommends. I had mentioned that I wanted to read more YA books, and I got some very, very cool recommendations, so I'm very excited about those. And I think that's it. I'm just going to launch right into the episode. You know what I will say is I never, ever, ever, ever remember to say this, but if you like the podcast, I would absolutely love you to leave a positive review, a 5-star review on iTunes. I never ask anyone to do that, and therefore my podcast is not accurately represented in its popularity on iTunes because I just never ask anybody to review it. So if you have the opportunity to do so, I'm told that's still something that matters, and it would be a huge help. And there we go. Now we will get into the episode, and take care.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
The first thing I want to say is I feel like I had the exact same turtleneck. Is it like a taupe and black stripe?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
I definitely had a very, very similar turtleneck.
Yes.
And then you have a classic pair of glasses.
Oh, yeah. Those are some Rhoda glasses. Those are
Mary Tyler Moore. Collector glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
They're collectible at this point. Yeah, that's one of those things where I was just thinking about that last night because I was watching Wild Country on Netflix. Have you seen it?
Oh, is that about the cult?
Yes.
I haven't watched it yet. I've got it's to, right?
Fascinating.
Really?
I don't, do you have any memory of that being
no,
a thing?
No, but this took place during our childhood.
Yeah, we were really young.
Yeah.
But like, it's, I'm shocked that I have never heard anything since. Like, no one refers to it the way Jonestown. I mean, obviously,
right,
people
right,
didn't
right.
die, so that's why. I
do remember some Rajneesh stuff.
Yeah, but that word means nothing. Like, it meant nothing to me when I started watching this. I was like, how do I not have any slight knowledge of this?
That is weird. That reminds me of another thing. You know, Patton Oswalt's wife,
oh,
Michelle
yeah,
McNamara.
Oh, I just listened to her book.
Oh, you did?
Fantastic.
Is it scary?
Yeah, I mean it's very uncomfortable what happened and how, you know, vulnerable people felt and stuff. But I interrupted you.
Oh my God.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. I bought it and I'm afraid to read it. I grew up in the Bay Area where a lot of this guy was working, mm-hmm. and I had no idea. I'd never heard of any of this stuff. And I'm like, wait, like I almost know that address.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's definitely Yeah, it's fascinating though, and what they were able to. I mean, she had so many chapters finished, and then they were the two people that really worked had been working closely with her anyway. Just to me, did such a great job of meshing everything and kind of, you know, making the editor's note like this part was pieced together from drafts that we found or notes that we found.
Yeah,
but that's the other thing that hangs over it is it's impossible for you not to, you know, it's told in the first person, so you're. You're just thinking about it. It has a whole other functional level of tragedy, especially when she's talking about Alice and Patton, because she does talk about personal stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's a complicated experience. I listened to the audiobook because I'm such a little
busy
bee. I kind of wanted to, but in a way I think it was good because I had I was like, I'm doing this, I'm listening, but I'm also on my bike or I'm doing laundry. And I think that kind of helped keep it from being as
intense. It doesn't feel like nighttime reading before you fall asleep.
It's definitely probably not nighttime reading.
In your house, it doesn't have more than three locks.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But anyway, the cult thing was, I was just looking back at old style. You know, you just look back at footage from the early 80s, especially. Yeah. And it just was not a kind time for anyone. Like, it just doesn't, I mean, it's been said before, but it's just, it's remarkable what some of the, you look at some of the styles, late 70s, early 80s, and you're like, I don't know that anyone could have liked what they saw when they looked in the mirror. Happening?
The shoulder pads.
You know? I mean, oh, at least God. That sort of makes some kind of weird sense in terms of, like, it's a cuts a strong figure or whatever.
Yes, that's
kind
true.
Of, because it's got the 1940s thing.
Yeah.
But some of the hair, excuse me, I just belched. Yeah. Some of the hair, and then some of the, like, the, all the glasses on the guys, they're serial killer glasses.
Right.
Because those were the only glasses anyone
at
had.
The time,
but we
though,
associated
they were
with,
just glasses.
Yeah.
They until a few killers. Serial killers.
All it took. You know,
and the Unabomber really took it to another level.
And that's, and I guess it's because, like, clear aviators, as they were called.
Yes.
That sounds super cool. You're like, oh,
totally.
Clear
they
aviators.
Look good. They look good on Melania.
Right?
Yeah.
But speaking of serial killers, no. But yeah, it's, you know, so anyway, I was just looking at the glasses thinking, like, I was going to ask you, do you feel, because I certainly had glasses that at the time I was like, these seem pretty sweet, and now I look at them and I'm like, that's half my face gone to glasses, my entire because I had that sort of owl, like, the droop downs that cover almost to, like, under your cheek, like under your cheekbone, and thought, this is, these are pretty good looking.
I think they looked grown up to me, and I was trying to look grown up. But I do, just off of this discussion, it's we grew up in a time where crimes were happening next door and you weren't aware of them. And now we're aware of every child in Syria that's, you know what I mean? Like, you can't get away from the traumas that people are experiencing. And it's, I don't know that that's better.
I agree.
You know,
I agree. My paranoia is, has steeped so much just since I joined, like, the online sort of neighborhood awareness.
Oh,
like,
next door?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's
ridiculous.
You would think that the only thing that happens in any neighborhood is car break-ins and robberies and people stealing stuff from your, and, like, suspicious this and suspicious that.
Oh,
and
you're
like, it's very depressing.
I got in a fight with somebody because someone said, you know what? This woman came up to this, my front door, and she didn't act like a robber or look like a robber, but here's her picture. And it's like, maybe she went to the wrong house. If she didn't look or act like a robber, hey, maybe she's not a robber, and you don't throw her picture on it. You know, like, what are you doing?
There was one that there was a similar to that. And I'm glad that, like, because I just lurk. I never post anything or like acknowledge anything. I just sit and lurk and, like, get, you know, uncomfortable. But there was one that was like that a few weeks ago where someone said, lately I've been seeing these, guys running at night. I mean, they're wearing, you know, like, running shorts and stuff, but they're running at night, and they don't seem to be, like, you know, sprinting away from anything, but, like, just their run, like,
oh,
and
my God,
so many people are like, people
exercising.
Go running at night, like,
oh,
it was
God.
Bananas, like, oh no,
God.
This is where we are.
Someone
we're
said
at
it's
this
Twitter
level?
For old people.
Yeah.
There is a good Twitter handle called The Best of Next Door that just posts
really?
The craziest. Yeah, they're hilarious.
I gotta look at it.
Yeah,
there was a period of time when too it was just like it. There was so much ugly, weird conservative versus liberal sort of bashing going on.
Well,
I don't even remember how it started.
It always starts with a Hispanic male was seen walking.
True.
And by the way, my son is Hispanic and he's about to be tall and, you know, gangly teenager, and he's going to be, it's like he lives here and he's allowed to walk, you know, and people are allowed to walk.
Don't ever let him wear a hoodie.
Oh my God.
Because God help
I know.
You if you wear a hoodie and you're not, even if you're white now, it's like, God help you. By the way, I love a good hoodie. But yeah, no, there was another one that was this. There was one that, like, I didn't see the initial post. All I saw was someone saying, my post got flagged and removed because I said I was looking for a Latina housekeeper.
Oh my God.
I'm Latina. I want a Latina housekeeper. I want a Latina who can speak Spanish to my child. I don't, you know, like, there's nothing racist about it. It got taken down again. Someone was like, I still don't care for this. This
hilarious.
Is racist.
But why not write the post in Spanish?
That's and a then, good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
You don't have to say I'm looking for a Latina. I just want someone who understands this post. And probably be a Latina.
I mean, that's a good point, actually. I wish that you would have been around when I was trolling.
You know what? That'll come around again.
And it's not that I don't go on there I don't go like, I wonder what's happening. It's because I get the notifications.
Yeah.
So I see a notification. I could just turn them off, but they're, clearly there's something about it I can't get away from.
But it is, it's like, who do I live near?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Was your, when you were mentioning being from the Bay Area and grow, where specifically?
Walnut
you?
Creek.
Okay. Yeah.
East Bay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, that's a punchline to a joke from my era of being in San Francisco.
Oh, were you, you're from the city?
No, but I lived in the city from like 96 to 2005.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah,
that was right in the prime of like, oh, if you're square, you live in Walnut Creek.
It's completely sort of, 100% merited. Yes. I had to move to Harlem to get the Walnut Creek phases, off of me.
You know, what, how many do you, you have siblings? Do you,
I have a sister who lives in the Northwest.
Okay.
And she's a psychiatrist.
How close in age are you?
4 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just, so does that mean, are you younger or older?
Older.
So did you, as you were leaving schools and stuff, it was like she would come was in. Just coming
yeah.
in.
There's the new one.
She,
yeah.
She crept the in behind you.
Kilmartin.
Did yeah. she have that? Was there that dynamic where it was like, here comes the next Kilmartin, everybody? You
know, she, my parents let me go to public school for the for elementary and middle, and she got into the Catholic school at a really young age. I guess I got, we both got in at the same time, but I was in fourth grade and I was like, no, I can't leave. Not my friends, these people who hate me. But for some reason, I'm like, because I had to make them like me. I'm like, I have 2 years and I can't, I can still win. If I leave now, they'll win, you know? And they never came around. But so she started in kindergarten at St. Mary's Catholic school. And then I went, I just stayed. And then we both went to the Catholic high school.
Mm-hmm. Was yeah. that all girls?
Yeah, Grandelette yeah. High School. Uh-huh. Have you heard of it?
I think I have heard of it.
Have you heard
it,
of De La Salle?
Yes.
It's across the street from De La Salle. It's okay. a sister school to De La okay. Salle. Yeah.
And was that, did that have the sort of like reawakening moment of like, oh, this is completely different from public school. Maybe it's better. Or was it just, was it weird to suddenly not be in a, because I just went to public school. Everyone knows
yeah,
this,
but
went
it was
to public
uniforms.
School all through and, you know.
Yeah, it was uniform. So that was different, but I'm not a fashionable person, so I was like, this is sweet, because yeah. I would probably normally wear the same shirt and jeans every day anyway, yeah. so I'm just wearing a skirt instead.
Yeah, understood.
And then
but see, I would have said no way, like a skirt that went anywhere above my knees all through even college. I yeah. would have been like, oh no, I don't want anyone looking at my legs. I don't yeah. want that felt
our
like very
were
dangerous to me.
Below the knee. They had okay. to be like an right, inch below
good.
The knee. Yeah,
that's
they would
good.
Measure.
I'm saying that's good for me. I'm not saying like that's good. They rolled them up.
Girls would have them below the knee and then they'd roll up. Yeah. And then, you know, by the end of the day, when you're heading over to De La Salle, they're like mid-thigh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, funny how that happens. They yeah. shrink throughout the day.
Yeah, and then we had religion class, which I hadn't. I'd been through catechism because I was raised Catholic. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't shocking, but it was, you know, every day it was like a lot of religion.
Did it feel, did it become so kind of rote that it just didn't have any meaning? Or did you, do you know what I mean? What was your relationship to that sort of daily dose of religion like?
You know, I don't remember. There was a Jewish girl in our class. And so, you know, and the whole thing was about Jesus. And I just remember her just being like, and I kind of had that feeling too, but, yeah. But maybe not as badly as she did. But we kind of had a cool nun, named Sister Eleanor. And, she was open to all debates and discussions. So I remember
that's
it being
what you want. You want that sort cool
of,
nun.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of fun, you know. Although I didn't really take to the teachings, mm-hmm. you know.
What were you excited about when you were in high school? What were your likes?
Ooh, I don't know. Don't remember being excited in high school.
Fair enough.
I remember being, I was just beginning like many years of bulimia and stuff. So I remember not being excited about food, but very focused on it and focused on calories. And that whole brain that you enter into when all you
it's
do is count your calories. It really is.
It's your full-time job. And you had a job all through high school.
Totally.
And your job was to be a bulimic.
Yes. And mm-hmm. and like now that's not part of my head, I think I can't believe I wasted so much of my brain on this stupid stuff. But maybe that's just teenage years. You're gonna waste part of your brain on something. Like you have to be obsessive about something.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. Anyway, that's where my that's where I was swallowed up for a while. But
do you remember, if you don't mind talking about it, I guess you brought it up. That'd be weird if I pried it out of you and then you're like, please stop prying. do you remember when it, the sort of moments that, and I don't mean like, what was the moment you realized that, you know, this was a huge focus for you, but do you sort of remember the development of like, suddenly, you know what I mean? Yeah. Did it feel sudden or did it feel like I kind of started to agonize about that? And then pretty, you know, and then within a few months, I suddenly was XYZ.
Yeah. I remember what made me realize or made me think I had to lose weight was when I was weighed in eighth grade by the male gym teacher. And he weighed everybody and wrote our weights down in chronological or numerical order.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes. On a chalkboard.
Why?
And who knows? Mr. Hoyer.
That's sadistic.
His name was George Hoyer, and he taught at Sequoia Intermediate. Okay.
Let's everyone go troll him.
Yeah.
As if I approve of social media trolling.
And that is, I was so upsetting. Pretty tall, and I had been a competitive swimmer, so I was pretty muscular, and I weighed like 150.
Yeah.
And I think I was like 5'9 at that
Completely
point.
Completely normal, great and normal. Strong.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
And I was the heaviest aside from... A guy who weighed 300, like a genuinely obese. But everybody else was like, maybe there were some boys that were right around me, but all the girls were smaller than me and stuff like that. So they were just all, you know, little, to me, they were like, oh, they're China dolls and right. I'm disgusting. And I weigh as much as all the boys do.
Right.
So, excuse me, my underwire is slipping out.
And, I got to tell you, I'm such a sports bra person now for that reason. I feel like I have had terrible luck with underwear.
I gotta fix this bra. But it's probably.
I'm so angry. I feel like this has just happened. I'm so angry at him.
I know.
How could that be anything other than intentional? I mean, I can't. You just thought it was interesting? Like, here's something interesting. Here's how much everyone weighs in order.
Maybe. It was there was no outrage. All I remember was feeling incredible shame. And then after that, then it started. Then I think I may have told my mother I want to lose weight. And she was like, then she just jumped in. Oh, and then Jesus. It became a pattern of me hiding food from my mom forever. And she lives with me now, so...
How's that going?
No. Not good.
As long as you don't go back to hiding food. As long as you don't
I just was thinking about this. Like, I don't cook or anything because I don't like to see her to... I just have an instinct of, oh, she's here. I don't want to eat in front of her or I don't want to, you know, be
that
seen.
Stuff
I don't
want to
be seen by her. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very old primal stuff for me anyway. Yeah, yeah. So...
What kind of stuff would you... Now I'm just indulging all of this. I can't wait to get to the part of the MASH game where I ask you about what foods you would like to have in perpetuity with zero ramifications. That is a tailor-made category for someone who's had food issues. I speak as someone who absolutely understands that.
If you're female, I assume you've had food
issues. Exactly. Sometimes it's not... Yeah, sometimes it's not as diagnosable per se, but it's... goddamn likely.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
God, I totally get it. And so when you were, would you eat at school or would you just starve yourself and then binge and then throw up?
I would do this other thing where I would eat and spit it out into bags and then I would collect the bags and then throw them away. But I would have a collection of bags first and then throw them away. I did some weird, like, ritualistic.
Listen, that's
saving
better. That
feels
better than throwing up.
Oh yeah. I couldn't make myself throw up. Like, I tried and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I would just chew and spit, and which was really gross. Like, I would be driving, you know, like driving myself to practice, swim practice and school and stuff. And I would just, like, when nobody was pulled up next to me, I'd take a bite. And it was always a peanut butter on a whole wheat because it was easy to. It wasn't like creamy where the calories would go down your throat.
Something might accidentally get through.
Yeah.
God. I know. You have such a sense of humor about it. I'm so empathetic. I just am like, I feel like, again, I'm just going to this place where it feels like it's happening. And I just want to take that young girl and just give her a big squeeze because that would have solved it. You just needed a hug from me. I'm a miracle worker like Jesus. I just get it. I get it. I mean, I was not that. I was not that until I was here. And then I didn't do anything like that, but there was a period of time here, many years ago where I was like, I'm clearly thinking about all of this all the time.
Yeah.
And that it really was, it was exhausting.
Yeah.
It was exhausting.
Yeah, for sure.
But my friend who was bulimic in high school and who told me only at the end of high school, you know, she sort of came out to me, if you will. And I really was just, I was like, I can't imagine. I was baffled at how she could have kept track of all of that and kept that, because you're just glued to people all day.
Oh, in high school?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're throwing up too, that's just, you have to keep the noise down.
Yes.
And it also starts to hurt your throat, and that's tough, man.
Where were you getting the energy to swim?
Oh, I had a lot of energy. I don't know. I was a teenager, you know, and I was keeping enough of the calories down.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But
did you, so was that when you say that you weren't excited by much, so that sort of did consume, pun intended, like, you know, getting crushes or dating or,
And I got crushes on like guys that would have been horrible for me had they reciprocated.
Yeah. It's all part of the self-abuse.
Yes,
I guess.
Yes. Yeah. I never liked guys that were, you know, decent. So yeah that was also a problem. It wasn't a ton of joy in high school.
But you had a cool nun, goddamn it. And one great nun.
Sister Eleanor, sure.
Oh, Sister Eleanor. What kind of, when you're in Catholic, private Catholic school, and you mentioned that you're doing the kind of, you do have the sort of religious studies. I'm sorry to ask this as if like I've never heard of Catholic school before, but I realize that I'm not totally sure if, you know, in a school like that, are you being offered multiple languages you can take, like French, Spanish, Latin?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's more like college in some ways, or
The rest of it was regular. It was, I think it was just freshman year where you had to take mandatory freshman religion, and then it could have been an elective, but I don't think most people took it as an elective.
Yeah. You know? When you mentioned before that the kids that you wanted to win over when you were in grade school, what were they opposed to about you?
Probably those glasses.
Or doesn't take
or
much,
some
does it?
Version of them that I think I had blue much. Ones in elementary school.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wasn't, I you know, wasn't a sexy kid. You know what? Do you know how there's some, they're like, you can tell their parent, like there's one girl with ringlets and I knew her mother must have, you know, done that every morning. And, and then somebody got boobs at fourth grade and she looked like a, you know, at that time, like a Playboy centerfold and stuff. And I was just like in smocks. My mom made me and, glasses and, you know, super cut haircuts and just, I don't know. Probably just look like a regular dork kid, but that's, you know, that's enough.
Yeah.
That's enough of a reason for people, for the cool kids to dislike you.
But then when you think about it, like everything you described is also like, God, how could that not have been the majority of us? Like,
I think
the majority of us were that.
I think it was. I just was obsessed with getting their approval, that this kind of gang of girls that was really dominant and mean and popular and stuff. Yeah.
I wonder why we're so drawn to that in our culture. Like I'm sure it's just a million different reasons and a million different pieces of stimulus that, you know, that sort of all lead to that. So, but, or if it really is, there's a lot of animalisticness to it. Like there is this sort of weird alpha,
they do have
animal,
a confidence in themselves to be nasty and to be, and so you're sort of you don't know, you're just wandering around through the world and you don't really know yourself. And then someone's really confident and they're mean or, you know, but it's a striking figure and you're like, well, I need a little bit of that. You know, and if she liked me, maybe that means I have some of it, you know, and I'm not just this formless blob. It took so long before I felt like I had like hard boundaries, you know, I just felt a piece of jelly that you could poke if you wanted to. And I wouldn't, you know, respond or I wouldn't know how to respond. So I wouldn't respond. I wouldn't know if am I allowed to be angry or do I have to, you know, let it go? And so I would just sort of let people, you know, hurt me or something like that and pretend like it didn't bother me.
God, that's so interesting. I think that's so well said. God, sorry. I'm just thinking about it. I think that's a really, I've never heard it expressed that way before, but I think that's also a very universal feeling for those of us who weren't, you know, the really cool ones. And then I was realizing as you were describing that, I was like, oh yeah. And also, you know, being interested in psychopathy and stuff, that's just like right around the corner.
What's psychopathy?
Well, just like psychopaths, you know, being interested in like that idea if you are a very sensitive person and, you know, I certainly was and am, and I've made certainly no secret about being one of those many people who are sort of like, I just want to study somebody who doesn't have remorse or feel like, you know what I mean? Yeah. As if it's an easier life. And then you sort of hear about how, you know, a full on psychopath is like prone to just fits of anger and like, you know, competitiveness, and it sounds stressful.
There's no joy.
Yeah. But the part of it that's interesting is like, God, what if you just didn't care about someone else's feelings?
Yeah, must be nice.
I mean, I wouldn't trade, but yeah, there's an element of kind of, God, if that was not a concern for you, kind of like we were talking about, like if that, those calories, if you will, those sort of emotional calories, you just like aren't burning them on, you know, oh my God, this person said this to me and what does that mean? And do they hate me? And, you know, I just used to agonize over that stuff, agonize over it.
Yeah.
Did you have a relationship to like zoning out on TV or reading books that were kind of an escape for you? Did you have an escape like that as a child and teenager?
Yeah. I read too, but yeah. You can't like hold a book and read hold a book and binge like you can when you're watching TV.
Sure.
Right? Both hands.
It's more numbing.
Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
Of whatever you're eating and just, you know, you're getting wrapped up in an image and a story and not paying attention to what's going in your mouth, you know, until you're done. So that was easier to do watching television.
That makes sense. Reading.
Yeah.
Were there specific things that like sort of pushed that dopamine button for you that in terms of both food and entertainment?
I can't remember. Like after I dropped out of college, maybe like Oprah, because I was at home during the day for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
Like afternoon TV, Oprah and whatever else was after her was total binge time.
That's how everyone thinks of it. Oprah and whatever else was after her.
That's daytime television. Yeah. Oprah and then everything
exactly.
else.
Exactly.
I guess late night, you know, I remember doing a lot of binging or eating during watching Johnny Carson and later David Letterman, you know, just late.
Which makes sense because, again, that's sort of, I mean, as many women and all human beings who can afford to live in a westernized culture, like we sort of pay attention to our bodies deciding at night, like I'm done having any willpower. So it's sort of
weird how
you
turn off at night.
Yeah.
Like I sometimes catch myself. I'm like, whoa, what am I doing? Even now I can't.
Yeah. They're like two different people.
Yes.
I mean, I've categorized them that like, morning Janet is really not going to be happy about, you know, nighttime Janet really wants to eat these chips and morning Janet's going to be like, well, that wasn't worth it. And how do you have those two? Yeah. How do those two have a conversation that is meaningful and helpful?
When is it? Is it when the sun sets? Is that when it comes out? Like, when is there a crossover and can I ever interrupt it and not turn into that?
Yeah. I think it's the later you're awake, and there are studies about it. Yeah, there's definitely studies about what happens, especially sort of, it depends on who you are and what your kind of, I don't want to say weaknesses are, but like where are your vulnerabilities and what have you taught to activate your dopamine and stuff. So the way somebody would come home and want to have, you know, a gin and tonic right after work at 5 or 6 or whatever, and just start that process of like, you know, pouring good feelings on your brain. Maybe it happens at different times for people, but it seems like the closer you get to the time that you want to sleep would possibly be, I'm sure. I mean, again, I wish
are we setting ourselves up for good dream is like, why?
Just
why
like,
do
all
yeah, humans
calm and
do that
safe
turn off
feeling? Maybe like calm and safe. Like,
so if we hadn't been at work all day, and if we had just been, you know, the gin and tonic people, everybody. So all day long, we're doing something we kind of
holding yourself
would rather
tightly
not be
and,
doing.
Yeah,
yeah. And then at night, we have to compensate for feeling stressed all day,
perhaps.
Versus, you know, like. I guess,
but like I have day. If I have a day where I just have like a mellow day, yeah. I don't know that that desire goes away. I feel like I'm still like, you know what would taste good right around now.
Yeah,
you know, sort of still yeah. have that. You wrote a book recently?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, will you tell me what about what
it's
you're,
called? Dead People Suck, and it's a comedy. It's like a comedic memoir about my dad dying of cancer. He was in hospice. He had lung cancer. He died at our house, and you know, funerals and all that kind of stuff that goes along with it. So it's kind of aimed at middle-aged people who are about to lose an old parent. Mm-hmm. It's about that kind of death, which is you know, expected but still shocking when it happens. Mm-hmm. It's not about any, you know, a young death or a suicide or anything tragic. It's right. about like, you know, the nature taking its course in its proper time, but how still devastating it is to be, you know, middle-aged and have one of your parents gone, you know. Yeah.
What prompted you to do that? Were you finding that you were incorporating your experiences into your stand-up and people were responding positively to it? And did you, like, how? What was that process? I'm sure now I've got you into like book mode, but well, I'll try to throw some surprises at you so you don't get into like a pat answer that you're bored by.
Yeah. Well, I did a special about it in 2016, and I just had a bunch of other ideas that didn't really, you know, work as jokes in a nightclub act that I thought were kind of longer and might be actually more helpful and, you know, just tips and stuff like that. And so I kind of wrote this other book called Shitty Mom, which was, they're really short chapters, are like 500 to 800 words at the most. Like you could read them on the toilet. And I just pitched it as Shitty Mom of Grief, where it's just little tiny, you know, things that happen to you and, or that you're going to be experiencing when you're in this situation. That's it. Yeah.
And so when you were writing something, like, is there a relationship to, you said your mom is still with us and very with you in that she lives with you. Were you having conversations with her about like, you know, like how much of your work, and your material is she aware of, and is she comfortable with? You know what I mean?
She read the book and she thought it was funny. Nice. But I don't care what she's comfortable with.
Yeah. was there ever a time where you worried about sort of pulling other people into your storytelling?
I worried. There's this one story about my cousins that I changed all their names, but they'll know it's them.
Yeah.
But no one else will.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard from them, and I'm sure they won't read my book anyway.
What's the story? So,
it's a story about I had a family of cousins that are super wealthy, and my sister and I had out like we every time we visited their house, we're like, what? And we just grown up going, oh my God, like it's just beyond our comprehension.
What was that like? I mean, what was their house like? What was different about the
way
that they were
using it? It was three stories. There was bedrooms that led into bedrooms. It was like a Winchester house.
Yeah.
Like a mystery house. At least when I was a kid, I was like, you know, there's a billiard room. It was crazy.
Yep.
And so my sister asked one of my cousins, one of the kids, okay, the money, does it come from the father or the mother? Because the father had a really great job and worked really hard, and the mother had inherited a lot of money. Uh-huh. And we wanted to know like who was wealthier.
The source.
We were just upset. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so my cousin said, the father, my father. And then my dad, who we thought was completely almost dead, were definitely in a coma, like rises from from his deathbed and goes, the mother. And then he falls back asleep. It was so funny. Oh my God. I never laughed so hard. I'm like,
well, thanks for checking in.
Because we were just having this conversation over him that, you know, even though he was seeing all of his dead relatives around him, he could hear the live ones still trying to figure stuff out.
Wait, so this is more recent that when did your father pass away?
He died in 2014.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is a more recent conversation of where did that money come from?
The conversation happened over his deathbed.
Got it. I was going all the way back to I was going all the way back to the idea of you and your sister as children being like, we got to find out who's got the money.
We sat on that for 40 years. Yeah. And then I guess, you know, all your defenses are down when something like that is happening. And my cousin was one of the kids and he's one of them more, you know, you could ask him that and he would tell you. And so he did.
But
he was wrong. Yeah,
apparently he got that all wrong.
Yeah.
Were they close by enough that you would see them regularly?
Yes. Yeah.
I definitely had, I mean, my dad, we had no money. And my dad had for whatever, it's funny, even now, like he has so many friends who just do very well.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like I spent a lot of time going to his friends' houses and maybe they had kids or maybe they didn't, but, and when you're younger, just having no sense of like why you would or wouldn't have the same cut, you know what I mean? Like, I don't remember. Yeah. I mean, I knew, obviously I was very aware that my dad was a teacher. Both my parents were teachers. I guess I had some understanding in that your parents would tell you like, well, we don't make a lot of money. And, you know, Bob over here is a dentist. So he blah, blah, blah. But everything else about it just seems so arbitrary when you're little because you yourself aren't earning money.
Yeah, right.
So it's still this kind of abstract thing that just is, it's just same, like having this feeling of wonder about what I perceived. And in some cases was right, was just like opulence, like the idea, like a billiard room.
Yeah, and
only
a bedroom
in the game
having
Clue
its own bedroom.
Is there a billiard room, except for...
And they had one of those round driveways and we would pull up on our, we had an Opel. The Opels were these cars from Germany. Uh-huh. And
Opel is sometimes a New York Times crossword clue.
Oh so my God, really?
That word comes up in my life too often.
So my dad and my dad worked in Germany for a while. So we had Opels. I guess it was cheaper to have them shipped over here than to buy a car here. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Counterintuitive. It seems like,
but I know it was cheaper because that's what they did because they were... Yeah. You know, trying to save money. So we had two Opals. They were matching Opals. And so we'd just drive our little Opel over.
Wow, this place is curving around the circular driveway of a three-story house. And did you ever do like holidays there? Because that would be the other
thing.
Yeah,
like,
the idea of Christmas there just sounds like it would be
there.
Such a...
That house was eventually purchased by Caspar Weinberger, who was the Secretary of Defense for Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like, I have it on a Google search. Like, if there's ever an open house, I will drive back up to the Bay Area to check it out. Because I just want to wander around and, you know, have my childhood triggered.
I have the exact same. There's a house that my dad's, one of our family friends bought that they, I guess it was sort of like a quote unquote investment. Like, oh, we can't afford this. I don't even remember them actually moving in. I just remember one Easter being up in Phoenix and my dad saying, we're going to go over to their house that they just bought. Because I don't feel like there was furniture in it even.
Yeah.
But we'll do an Easter egg hunt in the garden.
Oh, my God.
And there was like a tennis court. And I remember the house as like, I mean, I really remember it as being like a mansion.
Yeah,
like
I remember
being in a room that I was like, this can only be a ballroom. I'm in a ballroom. There's no furniture. And it's just slick, beautiful, glossy wood floors. Now, I did bring that up to my dad years later when I was like in my 20s and he was like, oh, isn't that nice? Whatever I've turned it into, he was like, no, I think that was just like a living room with no furniture. But in my mind, it was a full on.
You know what? Maybe my mind made it so big and it isn't that big.
But I mean, Reagan's defense secretary.
That's the thing that tells me like, no, I was probably right about that.
Yeah. Were there specific things that you...
Listen, they had nine kids and they each had their own bedroom.
Oh, that's absurd.
Right.
Also, nine kids.
Yes.
Why? I mean, cool.
Ended up being a combination family of...
Like a Brady Bunch situation.
Yeah. Both the original spouses died, and so they got married,
Okay.
But it was like...
Nine kids.
Own bedroom. Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Okay. Yeah. No, you're fine to think of it as a huge, that's yeah. a nine, that's a 10, yeah. that's at least a 10 bedroom
house. Yeah.
And a billiard room.
Yeah.
Do they have like God. A library?
I do remember books someplace.
Yeah. Like a den probably.
Yeah.
Like
but there was an entry, you know, there's like a, you entered and there's like just an entry space that was just to stand in.
Yeah.
You weren't immediately confronted with a hallway.
To let you adjust.
Yes. You're
it's like your decompression
now.
Room yes. to the opulence. Like, yeah, yeah, listen, yeah. you better get ready.
I know.
This is a shit awesome house. Oh my Lord. Did yeah. they have like, but they didn't have like horses or anything. Cause that feels like
no,
a different
they didn't
kind
have horses,
of.
But that might've just been cause every, my.
One for each child. We have nine horses, one for each
it
child.
It might've been just like a, the father was like worked all the time. And I think it was more like a, we're not horse people. Those are, that's old WASP money. Yeah. Yeah. We're Irish Catholic money. We got to keep working or we're going to lose all this stuff. Yeah.
Were there things that you looked at, not even just within that family, but just like things that you remember being covetous about that you saw other people have that you couldn't afford?
You know what I was covetous of was how big they were. Cause it was just the four of us, my sister, my mom and my dad and I. And I remember feeling like we were sort of like this little second family, like a little add on bush yeah. and they were like the main tree. And I resented being dwarfed by uh-huh. how big their family was.
That's funny.
Although they would, you know, they're all great people. I was yeah. just like, there's so many of them and they would take family pictures, you know, and they would take up the whole space. And they kept, then they get married and have their own kids and it was just giant. And then it was just us. And you like the photographer could zoom really close because, right. you know, whatever. So I kind of resented being like the little tiny add-on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's really
interesting.
We felt
like the add-on
though.
Family. I
you say that and I can, but it's because I didn't have that to compare my like
yeah.
single parent household with one only child, which really is like,
yeah.
does feel like sort of social afterthought in,
yeah.
in large gatherings for sure.
Yeah.
But I didn't have that envy of, you know, wanting siblings. Per se, not to say that that's what you wanted, that you were like, I desperately want seven other.
I don't know that
sisters,
I wanted
but.
Siblings, but I didn't like feeling like the tiny, just the extra, you know?
Yeah.
I guess even then I was a narcissist. I want my family to be the main ones.
Did you feel
like you would
yeah.
never invite them to our house? I guess
right.
that's the thing
yeah,
we
yeah.
could never
oh,
reciprocate
because yeah.
there was like, you know, at least 11 of them. And then they all had, you know, the people bring boyfriends or girlfriends. So they could never fit at our house. So we never reciprocated. There was another family on my mom's side of the family where we went back and forth on holidays because we were exactly the same size. There was four of us and we
yeah.
had the same small crappy house. Yeah. So it was
yeah.
the same tract home basically. And
yeah.
so it was, you know, pretty even, but we could never reciprocate with that chunk of family.
Yeah. So yeah. And were you an anxious person? Like, because I associate sometimes eating disorders again with that sort of need to control. Did you have anxiety about things beyond, your weight and kind of your physical appearance? Or was it all kind of successfully channeled into that? Like, I had a fear of driving, for example.
Oh.
Like, were you nervous, a nervous person about stuff?
I was more of a swimmer. So what I guess when I was nervous about not being a good swimmer, I had a lot of anxiety about that. And it was weird because there was other swimmers that I would come up with that would have these breakthroughs and they would all of a sudden go from being okay to, being really fast. There's a couple of them where I was like, how did you do that? And it seemed like a mental trick. There's this one girl named Bethany where I was faster than her. And then all of a sudden she was faster than me by a lot.
Hmm.
And she was always like in the top 16 in the country after that.
Wow.
And I was like, how did that happen? Because I'm like, she didn't get more gifted.
Yeah.
And it's almost like she made a decision in her brain.
Wow.
And I'm like, why can't I make that decision? And
wow.
then I was like,
yeah.
what's wrong with me?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
that was like 10
what
a, more years
that is a real
of what's
mind
wrong
fuck.
With me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that is, I could totally see that because First of all, I will say that I always thought that it seemed to me that
Beth Ann, her name was Beth Ann. Sorry, not Beth
Ann.
That's going to drive.
She's
going to
be very angry. She's going to write in
immediately.
Beth
Ann Lambert. That's her name. She was. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. Because that is, as a person who was not into sports and was not competitive in that way, and being already kind of into like the theater stuff with just within public school drama programs, nothing, you know, fancy or sexy, but
yeah,
but that's a situation where like I could have looked and seen that somebody had developed their acting ability or, you know, whatever that is somehow would seem more perceivable, like perceptible, than just suddenly someone's faster. That would totally fuck with my head too.
Yeah, if someone can act, you can see it instantly, yeah, right? But you do hear about athletes where like all of a sudden they exploded, yeah, and that's a neat story. But then if you think of the people that they were peers with going, well, why am I not exploding?
Absolutely.
What the fuck? What do I have to do to explode? And it doesn't happen for me. It did not happen for me. I never exploded like
you
that.
You never exploded.
I'm furious. I'm exploding now. I'm exploding with fury.
I'm going to track down Beth Ann and find out if she herself perceived that she had this kind of like.
The other thing, and I never asked her, which would have been a nice direct way to do it. Instead, I just made up a million theories in my head.
Of course.
But I heard like she had become really religious, and I was like,
Jesus did it.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that. I'm not doing that. There's got to be another way.
Yeah.
Besides becoming super Christian.
I mean, black magic? Witchcraft?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I want to find her.
We got to find Beth Ann. we'll do some offline searching around when we get the chance. For now, I want to get into this MASH game because we have, I want to make sure that we stay on time for everyone's sake. For everyone's sake, for the United States' sake. Okay, so do you know this MASH game? You know, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, House? Okay, good, because I forgot to tell you at the beginning.
Oh, wait, no.
This is like a silly.
I can follow along if I have half a head. Okay.
Yeah, all you have to do is give me your answers. Okay. They're just sort of improvised answers. So, okay. So the pressure is completely off of you, mostly.
Okay.
Other than that you're going to be like, ew, why didn't you give me any notice? But that's not how the game works.
I don't mind.
So your first category will be three. Let's go with these sort of like breakthrough explosion moments. We'll do the category is three gifts, three talents that this sort of future MASH universe Lori wakes up with, and you've just developed this talent or gift without even knowing it overnight. You wake up and what are three things that you're like, I would like to be miraculous at?
Oh, I would love to speak German.
Great.
Yeah,
this is the hard part. Is like
it is hard because part of me is like, oh, I should just learn to do that. Like I was,
it's turning into an opportunity for you to self to be like, why don't I? I could just do that.
I would love to be able to play piano. Now my son plays it because he takes classes, and I stopped taking classes.
Yeah, but this is the magical shortcut way.
Okay, and I would love to. Everything I think of I want is an actual added responsibility. Like I'd love to have a dog, but I'm like, who's gonna walk it? All right, I'd love to have a dog that self-walks.
Nice, self-walking dog.
Yes.
Yeah, this is all just like the icing, frivolous, fun, like no downside to anything game at the end that just sort of like peps us up and makes us go like, oof, this is fun to kind of think about and indulge in. No pressure on like, because I do the same thing. I'm like, oh, I used to think I would want to own but then I realized that would be so much like there's a lot of that. So this is our opportunity to kind of be childlike and just kind of celebrate the good stuff. And in keeping with that, three places in the world that you would like to have like a vacation home, if getting there were not a pain in the ass, you don't have to pay property taxes, etc.
Oh, Ireland.
Great.
Luxembourg. And what's that illegal island, the Seychelles? where nobody good lives. I want to live there.
I love it. Wonderful. Okay, this is our alternate universe lover, our alternate universe husband or wife, sexy times. This can be like a character from a book or a movie. It could be the person who played that person. It's sort of wide open, and it could be from any era. So it could be like, you know,
Atticus Finch.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. and then two more.
Oh, shit. Okay.
You'll end up with one from each category at the end of our sort of system.
Here. Okay.
System.
You know what? Abraham Lincoln, I think I could have cheered him up. I really do. He would have been happy with me.
Poor Mary Todd.
I would have given him.
She was a complicated lady. I feel like I probably would have been just like her when I was like,
you know, I know. I
was in that era.
With no iPhone?
Oh my God. Please. I would be in a sanitarium so fast. They would be like, she's having one of her spells again. And then I would just be locked up.
Gosh. I want somebody that's not white.
Okay.
You know, great. I'm like, why Understood. Am I just sticking with white guys?
Understood. Let's break it up.
Yeah. Now, this one worked because I think he's gay, but BD Wong.
Great.
Okay.
Not in this universe. He's not. I control your sexuality. How startling. Okay. This is the perennial indulgent favorite three foods that in this universe have no calories. They're calorie free. There's no ramifications. It's just you can have it in perpetuity with no problem. And you could also extend that out to like it could just be like a rare thing that you can't get because, you know, it was your grandmother's cupcake recipe or, you know, something like that.
Okay. Irish brown bread. Bacon and butter.
Great. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay, let's go three people from history or current times, but that you would love to have a kind of a collaborative relationship with on any level. It could be artistic, friendship, but you know, that's a person you can call and ask for advice, or it could be a person that you wrote a book with. Or
Dorothy Parker.
Great.
I don't know if she'd be a good friend, but Virginia Woolf.
Great.
And, you know, again, he probably wouldn't like me, but Oscar Wilde.
Great. We're not setting you up with someone who doesn't like you. Oscar Wilde would be in love with you as a person.
Oh, she's from Walnut Creek. No, thank you. I get
it. I'd be like, I get it. It follows you into the past.
It does.
He knows.
It goes backwards.
Ay. Okay. Let's do three places or like sort of places and times that if you could, without any risk, kind of drop into and just kind of bear witness to or, you know, see, could be an event, could be an era, a city at a certain time in history, three places it would be fun to get like a real view of.
Oh, well, New York City, before the revolution.
Great.
I guess, you know what? Walnut Creek, in the 1800s.
Great.
When it was just walnut trees and creeks.
Shout out to Walnut Creek.
Yeah.
Great.
And Mesopotamia, back when civilization was starting.
Ooh, yes. Wonderful. Okay, next category, three TV shows that from any time that you can jump into and just hang out with. It's you're hanging out with the actual characters. You're sort of in that world.
Seinfeld, Mary Tyler Moore, and MASH.
Great. I like the synergy of MASH and MASH with this MASH game. MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house, and that's sort of the pre-established, like, you'll get one of those in one of these places you want a vacation home.
Okay.
And then your final category, let's do what do I want for you? Let's do three alternate universe careers. Like, again, there's no sort of downside to it. It's sort of only the best you can imagine about each of these alternate universe careers.
Mm-hmm. Stay-at-home mom.
Great.
Lawyer.
Nice.
Politician.
All right. Boy, you really use those well, especially the last two. Like, all good, none of the bad. Yes, please. I just have to do one quick thing where it's sort of like within the next couple of seconds. I know this sounds strange, but just tell me when to stop. But it can be very short. Just tell me when to stop.
Okay.
Lori, I'm running out of room.
Hmm?
I said I'm running out of room. You just have to tell me when to stop.
Oh, go. Stop. Okay. Sorry. Oh, I
She told me when to go. She told me when to go.
Stop.
Okay, I'm going to pause this. I'm just going to do a little bit of, I want to say calculating. It is absolutely not anything as complicated as calculating.
Okay.
I'm going to be back with your 100% guaranteed fictional MASH future.
Oh, I can't wait.
Okay, I'm feeling pretty solid about this. I feel pretty damn good about what you ended up with. First of all, I just have to stay with my excitement at the MASH within MASH, but rest assured you can just jump right into MASH and hang out with all those characters in that world.
Cool.
Whenever you want, whenever you want to escape, you also have the opportunity to visit Mesopotamia.
We went
way back, way, way back. You have a beautiful apartment in Luxembourg.
Oh my God. I just got my citizenship in Luxembourg.
Hey,
so that's
really?
Perfect. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay. Well, listen, some of this might come true after all. You never know. You have, I assume that you have with you, not just at your regular home, but also in your vacation apartment, your adorable self-walking dog.
Oh, yes.
Your zero extra responsibility, delightful
it's a
companion dog.
So I could just hang out in Luxembourg and whenever I go visit.
It's possible we're now describing a robot dog, but that's cool. That's cool. You have a very, very fine friend and collaborator in the delightful Oscar Wilde. So not too bad on that one.
All right.
You have all the time in the world to spend with your family because you are a very happy stay-at-home mom.
Oh my God. And I'm collaborating with Oscar Wilde.
But you're also very busy collaborating just as a hobby. As a hobby, you collaborate with Oscar Wilde. And that gives you also plenty of time to spend at home celebrating and not taking for granted your astonishingly awesome husband, Atticus Finch. And all of this can be celebrated over just a nice table of breaking some Irish brown bread whenever you want it.
Yes.
In perpetuity. Delicious, delicious. And that, Lori, is your MASH future.
I'm in.
And that concludes
Take me there.
Our podcast. We got to get you there. But we also have to find Beth Ann. So where can people find you? What else? We mentioned your book. Certainly books.
Yes.
Special. But where can people find you? And is there anything else you'd like them to know?
Mostly on Twitter. Annie Lori, AnyLaurie 16. And I'm slowly just not paying attention to Facebook. So yeah, I'm going away from Facebook. Same. I can't delete it immediately, but I'm leaving.
I just did the thing where you like disconnect all your apps from it. And
I
really was like, wow, there are so
my gosh
that I'm linked to.
I just don't want to participate. They're just,
And
they're eager to, they don't care if there's a terrorist attack,
if
as long as people are connecting.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's about it. Kilmartin.com.
Kilmartin.com.
My book is available at Barnes & Noble or on Amazon or hopefully independent booksellers. It's called Dead People Suck and people seem to like it.
Awesome. I'm going to stop taking this picture of your picture right now because I think we can make that happen. Thank you so much, Lori.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.